Sometimes you just need to touch grass, literally and figuratively. And we recommend you bring books. Tell the bibliologist set tailored book recommendations about what you love and what you don't and what you want to read this summer on your outdoor adventures. You can get your recommendations via email or receive hardcovers in the mail. And TBR has plans for every budget. This summer, touch grass and bring books. You pack the bags, we pick the books. Visit mytbr.co to sign up today. It only takes a few minutes. That's mytbr.co.
Welcome to Hey YA! From great new books to favorite classic reads, news stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations, Hey YA! Is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA! Is a Book Riot podcast hosted by Erica S. Cuddy and me, Tirza Price. We are recording this on August 11th. Hello, Erica.
Hey, hey, hey. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm in a weird, like summer is kind of over, but it's not. Like, school is coming back. I don't know why. It feels like a weird time. I'm sure you kind of can relate to it as well in a way, but yeah. So that's where I'm at. I'm doing well, but it feels weird. Yes.
That weird sort of like summer is ending, fall is almost upon us in between stage. Mm-hmm. I can totally relate. I just moved from Iowa back to my home state of Michigan, which is very exciting, but also, holy cow, a whole heck of a lot of work. And I'm also kind of feeling the whiplash of like, summer is kind of to an end, but like not quite, but kind of is. My partner is a university professor, so they're like already like, okay, come on, time to focus. It's time for fall. And I'm like, but it's only August 11th. So yeah.
Yeah, this is their time to shine. Like fall is, yeah, very professorial. Like, yeah, that's their moment. I get it. I totally get that.
It's the busy time of the year. Yeah.
Yes.
So, but I'm also, I'm excited for fall. It is my favorite season. It does come with lots of new book releases. So it's a good time.
Oh my God. Yeah. It is such a good, fall is the reader's season. Like every season is our season, but fall is like extra that season. So I am also excited for all of the many new releases that are going to come out.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, I can't wait.
Yes, same.
Okay, so this week for news for you all, it is a great month to be a YA reader if you like YA book adaptations, because Love Boat Taipei by Abigail Hing Wen has been made into a movie. They renamed it, so now it's Love in Taipei, which I'm going to absolutely call Love Boat in Taipei because the association with the original title is strong.
That's real.
Yeah. And so it's been made into a movie, and the movie is available on Paramount Plus. Yeah. It hit Paramount Plus on August 10th. If you do not have Paramount Plus, I think that there's a really good promotion going on where if you, you can sign up for a free month with the code LOVEBOAT. That's what I've been seeing on, or not LOVEBOAT, Taipei. See, I'm already confusing the titles.
Yes.
If you are unsure, go to Abigail Hingwen's social media because she's been sharing this information. So you can watch it that first month with your free subscription. I have not watched it yet. I don't have a subscription to Paramount Plus, but I'm definitely thinking about taking advantage and watching because the adaptation looks so cute. And
it looks really cute. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll link the trailer in the show notes, but like, I think it's really great too because you're seeing more and more like predominantly Asian led casts in movies coming out. There's like, this one's obviously a YA adaptation, but there's another one called Joyride. And I just think it's really great to see more, like TV and film that is led by an all-Asian cast that is doing well and is getting the hype, because that's awesome. And that's not really something I think we saw very much before Crazy Rich Asians.
Which is hard to believe because it's like, come on, but here we are. And so, yes, it is good to see predominantly Asian-led casts and stuff like this. So I'm excited to watch it. I also don't have a Paramount Plus subscription, and I didn't know that they were given the free trial. So I'm going to have to hit up the author's socials to see what I can scrounge up so I can watch it. It looks cute.
Yeah, it looks great. And I think, you know, we've talked maybe about this before in the past that, like, there's not a lot of YA books that are set outside of the U.S. that isn't, like, you know, Paris, London, maybe Canada. Yeah. Sorry, Canadian YA. I didn't mean to sound so dismissive to you just now. But, it's exciting to see YA books set in other parts of the world that don't typically get a lot of play when it comes to YA.
Definitely. For sure.
And then the other adaptation, which you've probably not really heard very much about, because this one kind of, like, I feel like it snuck up on us because we were all in the book riot Slack being like, oh my God, this movie comes out next week. And I feel like I've heard nothing about it. Landscape with an Invisible Hand, which is originally a book by M.T. Anderson. It's just a slender little novel. But M.T. Anderson, you might know him because he wrote a little book called Feed, which was an award winner back when it came out in 1999. It has an epic first line. It's a great book. And then this is his newer sci-fi book. I think it came out in like 2018. And it is being made into a movie. And it actually has a theatrical release on August 18th, which is amazing. I'm going to have to see if it's going to be in a theater anywhere near me. But the premise of this one is that, like, Earth has been taken over by aliens. And they control all, and the systems that the aliens impose upon the humans are not super great. Like, there's a lot of economic restrictions, which means that, you know, humanity is not having the best of time. But the aliens are super obsessed with, like, 1950s style, like, human traditions and like, you know, just that, like, really conservative sort of lifestyle. And so these two teenagers, they come up with this plan, which is brilliant, which is they're like, oh my God, the aliens love, like, everything, you know, 1950s Americana. So they pretend to, like, have this, like, fake dating relationship where they, like, are, you know, acting like they're 1950s teenagers going on dates and they're, like, broadcasting it. They're essentially live streaming their relationship for the aliens to watch and pay for. And it's successful. But, like, as they're going about doing this, they, like, start to hate each other and they don't want to be doing it anymore. But they can't stop without losing, like, their only source of income, and they're basically supporting their fans.
Oh, wow.
Right?
That is a unique premise. I didn't see it going there.
I know. I thought about it and I was like, oh, you know, aliens, you know, okay. This is before I heard about the recent news of, you know, alien confirmation, whatever. That's been in the news lately. But, like, when the book first came out, I was like, you know, if aliens do exist and if they are fascinated by humans, this book is totally plausible. Like, I can totally see it happening.
Yeah. I like how they're not, like, the common image of aliens, which is, like, you know, laser beams and abductions. They're more like, they're described as, like, annoying, oppressive, like, little bureaucrats. And I'm like, yeah. Right? Why not? You know?
Yes. I definitely want to see this. It has William Jackson Harper and Tiffany Haddish in it. So, I mean, I don't know any of the other actors, but I know those two. And I'm like, let's go. I want to see this.
It sounds fun. It sounds interesting. I definitely, and again, of all the, like, why they gets adapted, I'm surprised they chose this premise, but it's because it's an interesting, like, very unique one. So I definitely want to see this also.
It sounds like, because it's not, like, the book wasn't super flashy in terms of being, like, a big bestseller that everyone's known and read. I kind of wonder if maybe the filmmaker just, like, read the book and was like, I deeply identify with this. I'm going to make a movie about it, which does happen. I love that happens.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited about both of these. And that alien sort of premise is a nice little segue into our topic of the week. But first, let's hear from our sponsor.
Sometimes you just need to touch grass, literally and figuratively. And we recommend you bring books. Tell the bibliologists set tailored book recommendations about what you love and what you don't and what you want to read this summer on your outdoor adventures. You can get your recommendations via email or receive hardcovers in the mail. And TBR has plans for every budget. This summer, touch grass and bring books. You pack the bags, we pick the books. Visit mytbr.co to sign up today. It only takes a few minutes. That's mytbr.co.
Okay, so I have one more announcement for you before we dive into our topic today, which is our little book club buddy read of A Song of Salvation by Alicia Dow. But first, if you want to escape the dog days of summer with a perfect book recommendation, let Tailored Book Recommendations pick some awesome books to keep you entertained. Touch grass, grab some lemonade, and enjoy TBR's picks. It's really great for readers of all stripes, no matter what you like. You just fill out a survey and our expert real live bibliologists will then pick out books and recommend them just for you. Yes, they are real people. They are not AI. They are not algorithms. Yeah, we've both done this before, and it is real people giving you these recommendations. So we offer plans for all budgets, whether you just want the recommendations in an email or you actually want to be sent the books, there is an option for that. So you can go to mytbr.co to sign up today, and it only takes a few minutes. That's mytbr.co. Okie doke. So, A Song of Salvation by Alicia Dow. I love this book.
It's so much fun. It's so fun.
Yeah, it's like a really fun book about some like really dark and oppressive subjects. But yet at the same time, I was like, oh, that was marvelous. Like, you know?
No, you're right. It is. I think I'm thinking about, because I like just finished it. I think I'm thinking about certain characters. But overall, so like, okay, let me run that back a little bit. It is fun, but the overall message is actually like kind of dark and depressing, but like real.
Yeah, but I feel like that's what the author does so well in this book, is that like she takes a really dark and depressing premise and one that like is a real downer and has very obvious parallels to our world.
Yeah.
You know, and yet like she fills it with like such delightful, vibrant characters and such fun moments that It doesn't feel like a downer of a book, but it does make you think.
Absolutely.
So do you want to kind of give a little, you know, I don't know, like 1 minute summary of the book? Like, we do want to say that we want to keep this a non-spoilery chat. So if you've not read it, hopefully you can listen to this and be like, ooh, I want to read this book, not like, oh, thanks for ruining it for me.
Yeah, let's start with a summary, and then maybe we can go into what we liked about it.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So this is about Zara. She is, so they're alien to us, right? So she lives on planet, oh my gosh, I knew I should have written down the name.
Mount Ares,
yes. So she's on that planet with her grandmother. Her grandmother's like her only living family. They're not related by blood, but rather by like kinship and found family type things. And so she's known since forever that she is the reincarnated god Indigo. Indigo, we learn in the beginning, Indigo like created all life basically. But then there was another god, Osmios. I may be saying that incorrectly.
Osvios. There we go.
Yes.
I listened to the audiobook and I'm like, wait, how was it pronounced? Osvios.
Yes. All right. Let me pull up my notes because this is science fiction and fantasy. Like, there are names, okay? Names I've never come across before. Let me get my life together. So Osvios is like the opposite of Indigo, where Indigo is like light and creation. Osvios is like destruction, because I guess, you know, balance and all that. Whatever. Anyway, so Osvios came into the picture and he like, you know, shook the table, ruffled feathers, messed things up. And after that, Indigo kind of receded into darkness and she went to Mal Ares. and kind of chilled for a minute. And then she came back as Zara. So people were expecting, I guess, like the group of people that Zara was born into, people were expecting that she would come into her powers and kind of save everyone from this really oppressive group of people. They are called the Ellori, and they've just been running around conquering everybody, making colonies. You know, they're very imperialistic. So they like follow Osvios, and they're like, kind of like, he's the god of destruction, and they are kind of like moving in his honor in a way, because they're destroying stuff and taking over worlds and stuff like that. But she doesn't really come into her power as people thought she would, as she thought she would. And so she has to kind of adapt to this new situation. And in the very beginning, she's supposed to be like sacrificed because the Ellori see her as a threat. And through her sacrifice, like something is supposed to happen, leave you to, you know, find out what that is. So that doesn't go quite according to plan. There's an escape. They plan an escape for her, her grandmother, and this kid she grew up with, Kiernan. And she is told by her grandmother to go find this boy named Wesley Daniels, who is on another planet. Now, Wesley is an interesting character. Because I will say, when it went to his chapters, the main chapters, they take turns between being from Zara's point of view and Wesley's point of view. And then they have some other things, some other like perspectives that I'll get to, that we'll get to in a second. But Wesley's was interesting. I really liked. So like Wesley's point of view, it kind of reminded me of Murderbot by Martha Wells, which is not YA, but a book series that I really love. It's really fun. I don't know, just kind of had that vibe. I listened to it on audiobook a little bit, and it kind of just gave me that vibe. It was really fun. Cause so like Wesley should be going to school. He goes to this like bougie school because he comes from a wealthy family, but a family that is, his mother is like really cold and mean to him and stuff like that. And she basically sent him away to this boarding school. So he's supposed to go to school, but instead he's trying to raise money to free himself so that he can live as he wants.
By smuggling.
But yeah, yes!
That's an important detail.
You're right. I was trying to be like, okay, because they gotta save the world, but also Wesley is a smuggler. And you're right. You are so right. So Wesley is smuggling. He is, you know, earning his freedom one smuggle at a time. And Zara is supposed to meet up with him to save her planet.
And he has no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you add to that summary, Tirza, without being like too spoilery?
I think that's very good summary. I would add as well that there is another character who is not really included in the publisher marketing, but he's very important. His name is Ruben.
Mm-hmm. Yes, love Ruben.
Yes. He's a really fun character that, like, he's not super prominent at first, but then you realize he gets pretty important later on. So he's mm-hmm. kind of like this fringe character at first, where Wesley listens to this podcast by this guy named Ruben, and it's this total anti-imperialistic, like, calling out the Ellori Emperor and the Ellori Empire for all of their colonizing ways. And, of course, the Ellori Empire owns pretty much everything, so they're trying to silence him, and he's forced to go on the run. So at the, you know, towards the beginning, when, before Wesley meets up with Zara, his job is to basically protect Ruben and get him where he needs to be without the Ellori Empire finding him. And that's kind of when Zara runs into them. And so these three are thrown together on the ship, and he's just, you know, Ruben is a big talker. He is very much like, you know, down with the Ellori. He wants to interview everybody. He's constantly trying to broadcast what is going on. And Wesley's like, you idiot, like, don't tell them where we are. Like, stop trying to dig us into an even deeper hole. But it's really Ruben who I think kind of convinces Wesley, like, that they should care about Zara and what her mission is, because he takes an instant liking to her. And
yeah, he does.
So they're, and you know, there's little hints to Wesley and Reuben are both gay. They kind of like have this thing for each other. There feels like there's something kind of starting there. So yeah, it's fun. I really like, they were this very unexpected trio that is a really fun, you know, set of characters to follow.
I will say on that note, like, them as a trio, that's a new trope I could get down with. Like, I have seen the two guys, one girl trio a lot in media, books and movies and shows and everything like that. But I like the dynamic here because the guys here are gay and the girl is like the super powerful one. So it's an interesting take on that trope. I liked it.
Yeah, me too. Like, it, because honestly, at the very beginning of the book, I was wondering if they would try to set up Zara, like, or if they, I mean, by the author, if the author was setting up, like, Zara and Wesley. And it wasn't that, like, yeah, I wondered to that. Like, yeah. I certainly wasn't opposed to that on principle, but, like, I've just seen it so often in YA that, like, you know.
Yeah.
And that I was really pleasantly surprised when the first time she drops the hint that Wesley is actually gay and likes Reuben and is crushing on him. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
So
I love the twist. And Reuben is a lot of fun. I think when I said the book was fun, I was thinking of him.
Because yes, I had written a note, I thought, or something so. To me.
I was thinking of him. Like, without him, the book is way less, like, there's a lot less levity to it.
He brings the fun.
Yes. He's like a ray of sunshine. He has these, like, very interesting, like, fashion tastes. And he carries around this clutch that can, like, pop out and, like, pop you in a jumpsuit real quick, fast. And I was just like, yes. So he's that kind of, like, fun character who's, like, kind of ridiculous and maybe becomes a little emotionally attached, like, a little too quickly. Just maybe, like, a little bit. Like, that's real, though. Some people are like that. So I've definitely met some Rubens before, but Reuben is a great big chunk of fun. I like the idea of, like, gods and creation and stardust, like, the lore of the world was interesting, I felt. And there were some real moments of, like, to think of it like that. Like, it starts to become kind of philosophical or metaphysical, I guess, to think of, like, oh, what if, you know, it kind of makes you think, like, oh, what if it really is like that? So there were some moments in the book where, like, the language was pretty and the descriptions and just how Alicia Dow wrote about, like, you know, existence and living things coming into existence out of the stardust and stuff like that. So I liked those moments. I thought they were nice.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then one of my notes too is, like, the mythology of the world. Like, if you like mythology, but, like, you're not necessarily wanting to, like, dive into a retelling of, like, a, you know, real world Earth mythology, this is really good because it brings all of those vibes of, like, a mythological retelling while also, you know, being fiction. And I'm certain, like, if you know mythology really well, you might kind of recognize, like, some inspiration that Alicia Dow had for the book. But yeah, it was so interesting. And I, you know, one aspect that I really liked about it was how Zara's, all of her powers and her ability and her sort of manifestation of Indigo comes out in the form of, like, songs and, like, melodies and, like, this, which is really interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, it was so interesting and a really cool, I think, unique spin on, just, like, how that sort of, I almost said magic. It's not really magic because it's power, but you know what I'm saying. I think it was just really cool how that manifested.
Yeah. No, that's true. And like you said, there is some inspiration from, like, I guess, real world mythologies. And I noticed that. I felt like that was one. And that was also another moment that I liked because I was like, oh, I saw the familiarity there with other, like, already existing mythologies. Like, just the idea of speaking something into existence, like the word being something that, you know, brings forth, you know, life and stuff like that, how Alicia Dow conveyed that was really pretty. And I agree, too. I liked the for lack of a better phrase, magic system. Because, like, yeah, like you said, it's kind of like not magic. But yeah, I really like that aspect of it.
Yeah. So she's like, yeah, it's technically considered, like, she's called a night weaver because she can harness that power through music, which is really cool. And the other thing I thought was really interesting is this idea that, like, so Indigo, you know, you, this power is Indigo. It's like he uses those songs to literally, like, make that life and make the beauty in this universe. And Asvaios is kind of like this god of destruction, but also the fact that, like, there needs to be balance. So Izara, you know, overextends herself and is trying to, like, you know, create too much, like, there has to be balance. And that's really interesting, too, because I think it's an interesting and more nuanced take on, like, the ideas of, like, you know, dark and light, good or bad. Like, sometimes people are like, you know, it's either one or the other. But, like, you know, it's not necessarily, like, one is inherently bad and one is inherently good. Like, there's has to be balance. And I thought that was an interesting concept to kind of explore and look at. And, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, on that note, I liked, and maybe this is just something that I'm seeing more in YA books, especially science fiction and fantasy, YA books, which have more of the good versus evil thing going on, of course, and, you know, battles, like final boss battles and stuff, where this type of thing would be relevant. But in this one, I like how, you know, all these terrible things are happening to people, pretty much courtesy of the Ellori and their colonizing ways. But people also are like, there's none of that, oh, you have to forgive someone and, you know, you shouldn't want to get revenge and stuff like that. I feel like there are times when the characters are like, nah, this awful thing happened to you. It happened to me, happened to a lot of us. Like, you can feel angry about that. Because I don't know, I just feel like, I think that we're all kind of moving away from it, from this. And by this, I mean, like, that idea that the hero or protagonist or whatever has to be, like, 100% forgiving. And if they succumb to any anger or anything like that, then they're ruined or it's just, like, you know, not desirable. And it's like, no, like, your family got killed. You can be angry.
Absolutely. And I, on that note, too, I'm glad you kind of pointed that out, because this sort of dovetails into what I was going to point out next, is that, you know, Zara's grown up being told that, like, she has a purpose. Like, she doesn't even really have parents or family, like, biological family. Like, she, you know, she was carried by a woman who they were purposely being, like, we are going to bring the next iteration of Indigo into our world. And she's always been told, like, this is her purpose. But then there's, like, a moment in the, this is kind of, like, I think in the first half of the book, or around the middle point, where she, you know, is using her powers to escape and to, you know, to battle the Ellori Empire and people who would, are out to harm her. And she could kill them all. And in fact, in the past, like, she has killed anybody who's gotten in her way, because they would absolutely kill her first. Like, she's not vindictive. But, like, she also realizes that, like, I don't necessarily want to be a murderer. Like, I believe in justice. I'm not opposed to, you know, vengeance. But, like, in this moment, I don't need to kill all these people just because they're in my way. And it's like the start of this really good journey for her as she's kind of trying to figure out, like, yes, she knows she's Indigo, but, like, how does she want to move through the world? And, like, how does she want to react? And, like, what kind of person does she want to be? And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I liked how the story in general, especially as well as for, like, Wesley, it explores, like, societal expectations, parental expectations, and it shows that, like, it shows how detrimental and harmful they can be if they are, like, very strictly enforced. And if, you know, people and kids are, like, criticized for them. Because Wesley's in a really, like, kind of bad spot as far as that goes, especially in the beginning of the book. And Zara is, too, in a way, because she feels like she's let people down. She's not who she's supposed to be. But the thing is, they're expecting her to be Indigo, as Indigo was. But
she's Zara.
Yeah, exactly. Indigo came into existence themselves, like, in totally different circumstances and had different experiences. So Zara being reborn as Indigo, those are, you know, that's a whole new set of experiences and a, you know, a new version of Indigo. So who is Zara, really? So that exploration was really interesting.
Yeah.
Wesley's mother was like almost comically terrible.
She was. Well, and it's interesting because I don't know if you had this experience. I'll let you, let me just say this and then you can go on. But when I first started reading the book and he was all like, my mother sent me away. She doesn't like me. She doesn't love me. At first I was like, is she like truly as evil as he's making her out to be? Or is like, has he been sent away for like some secret reason that will like become
That's what I thought.
At the end of the book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she's bad.
And it kind of just turns out that she's terrible.
She's just bad. Yeah. She's just terrible. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, oh, she did this because the little magic fish bit her and they told her to do this, like send him away and make sure he doesn't come back. Because if he comes back, then, you know, the prophecy will not be fulfilled. But, you know, so make sure he stays away.
Something like
and
that.
It was like, no, girl, she's just terrible. She's just awful. I was like, now, sis.
Yeah. Which is fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, like, I mean, which is fine from, like, a storytelling perspective, because, like, some parents are just literally terrible, and they totally play favorites with siblings and whatnot. Because, oh, yeah, the other thing is that Wesley's brother is, like, a famous musician, so, and she clearly favors him. But, yeah, I was, okay, I'm glad we were on the same wavelength there.
Yeah, I was just like, all right, now. I keep wanting to say the book was fun. I'm also still looking like at the cover. I brought up the page for it on Goodreads. It's so pretty. So I could remember like the people's, you know, the characters' names because the names are different. So like, well, Wesley is, you know, I've heard of Wesley before, and Zara too, but Osvios and stuff. I was like, all right, let me make sure I say these names correctly. But I think, yeah, I'm thinking of Ruben. I'm looking at the cover, which is so pretty, like you just said. And that's why I keep wanting to say it was fun. But yeah, I saw some comparisons to like Octavia Butler, and I definitely could see some of that in it as far as like a sci-fi / fantasy story that, like you said earlier, examines some very earthly problems very well and uses like takes it out of us, like away from humanity and or kind of away from humanity, because Earth makes an appearance. Humans make an appearance. The aliens think we're cute, by the way, which was funny.
Yeah.
But
I like that.
Do you have any other like moments that you thought were fun or any other observations you made?
So yeah, it's really fun book. And I think there's a few more things that we want to touch on as well that are non-spoilery. But first, let's hear from our next sponsor. Okay, so yeah, I think the overall consensus is like, yes, good book, good pick, beautiful cover. Yeah. I did want to mention one other thing, because I don't feel like this is like necessarily vitally important to the book, but like just something I appreciated and I kind of wanted to shout out, which is that like, you know, we get like obviously character like descriptions, like, you know, we get skin tones, eye color, hair and all of this stuff, which allows you to like paint like this really vivid picture of the characters. And the illustration of the woman on the cover, I think, is a pretty accurate depiction of how Zara's described in the book. But one of the things that I also really liked is that, like, I think at one point, like, she's described as like sturdy and thick. And
yes.
I appreciated that, like, you know, it's not just like another skinny protagonist, like, or, but like the author went out of her way to be like, no, this is somebody who is sturdy and thick and she's strong. And so you're not just getting, you know, your typical, I guess, like thin gaze type of protagonist. Like, she's very clearly body positive. Like, this is who Zara is. And I was just like, another, I think it's a smaller detail that I appreciated in reading this book.
No, yeah. And it's also like, her not being thin is not made to be a big deal. It's just like you said, like, the author describes basically everyone's physical appearance, like when you first meet them, kind of. And so it's just painting a picture. Also, Ruben is delightfully thick, too, so.
Yes. Yeah, because there's a one point when he, like, pulls out of his magic little pack a jumpsuit for Zardo. And she's like, there's nothing that could fit in that pack that could, like, also fit me. And he's like, no, it's just a spare jumpsuit. I think it even has, like, built-in undies. And he's like, you'll love it. And it fits her because they're basically the same size.
Yeah.
So that was delightful.
I was like, I want a pop-out, like, jumpsuit with built-in undies. Like, that is an invention we need to get on. That needs to happen. Whoever's listening, make it happen.
Yes.
Yes.
Make it happen. Oh, yeah. So, I really enjoyed this book. I think... Oh, here's a fun question for you. Not to put you on the spot or anything, but like, okay, if you read and enjoyed this book, was there like a YA book that you would recommend to go along with this one? Or if you liked A Song of Salvation, you should read X, Y, and Z next.
Ooh, I think that, well, there is, Alicia Dow has other books, so that would be a good place to start, but that's probably not what you're thinking of because... That's kind of obvious. I kind of feel like there's one by Lillian Rivera that's coming to mind. Actually, there is one I'm trying to think of that I can't remember the name of, but it is a retelling of an epic Hindu poem, but it's a space opera. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Ooh.
I can't think of the name.
I feel like maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is it... I know, now we're going to have to be like, oh, is it this? Is it that? That sounds amazing.
I found it. A Spark of White Fire, I believe.
Ooh, I have not read that one. Oh, that one looks good. A Spark of White Fire by Sangu Mandana. Yep. Okay. Oh, yeah.
The blurb says, in a universe of capricious gods, dark moons, and kingdoms built on the backs of spaceships, a cursed queen sends her infant daughter away, a jealous uncle steals the throne of Kali from his nephew, and an exiled prince vows to take his crown back. It's kind of adjacent, right?
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a good recommendation. If you like this, then this. Yeah. Oh. Okay, adding this to my list. Because I think this book was, like, maybe kind of on my radar, but, like, I'd never, like, actually added it to my TBR. Mm-hmm. So, thank you, Erica.
Of course. I'm glad I could think of it. Well, I didn't think of the name. I thought of the description, and I was able to Google it real quick, fast.
Awesome. I think if I were to recommend something similar to A Song of Salvation, I'm thinking about, like, the whole space travel and the fun, like, banter with that Ruben adds to the book. I would have to recommend the Illuminae Files trilogy by Amy Kaufman. And they're really fun because they're similar to A Song of Salvation, which has, like, these little sort of interludes of, like, the podcasts and announcements. The Illuminae Files are told completely in, like, transcripts and other sort of found data and materials. And they are about what happens when a very bad corporation kind of has, they basically break the law and they have a little bit of corporate overreach and they cause this disaster. And these teens who are survivors basically band together to try to, like, basically tell the entire universe, like, hey, this is going on. This is really bad, and expose what's been happening. But there's a lot of intrigue and danger and excitement, and it's, you know, set in space. So it was really fun. So I recommend the Illuminae Files by Amy Kaufman.
That does sound really fun. And I did really like the addition of the podcast excerpts or little segments in the book that Ruben did. Those were fun. So yeah, I think both of our recommendations together, they kind of like equal, like, well, they both like individually touch on points that this book had. But yeah, no, that sounds really good. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that one. And it's, like I said, it's a trilogy. You're definitely going to want to read all three books. And they're kind of, like, they seem really thick, but I promise you that, like, there are some pages where, you know, there's only a few words on the page because it's, like, space poetry. So you get
space poetry.
All sorts of different mixed. Yeah. Yeah. It's the AI on one of the ships is malfunctioning and writes poetry.
Oh my
which
God.
Which is so random and I love it.
I like the idea of something malfunctioning and it writing poetry as a result. It's like, it's a little shady, right. But it's kind of poetic, pun intended.
Yeah. And I know that the idea of AI writing poems is maybe not like the most popular idea in the year of our Lord 2023.
Oh, yeah, definitely
but,
not.
In this fictional, yeah, in this fictional sci-fi adventure, it was kind of fun. So,
yeah, I like how it sounds. Yeah. I'm definitely into space and space operas and space exploration. There's so many interesting things that come as a result of it. So I love to see how the authors create their worlds and things like that. So that sounds fun.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, science fiction is one of the genres in YA that, like, yes, there are some very popular YA sci-fi books. And it's not like they never are released, but it's just not quite as numerous as I think, like, YA fantasy is.
Yeah.
Or even YA horror. I feel like in the last few years, YA horror has really exploded. And YA sci-fi has not quite had its moment like that. But there's some really good YA sci-fi out there. And I admit, too, that, like, sci-fi is not my go-to genre. I enjoy it. I will definitely read sci-fi. But every now and then, like, I'll read sci-fi and be like, oh, my gosh, this is so good. Why don't I read more of this?
I'm the same way. Yeah. I gravitate toward... Well, I... Sometimes I think, like... I don't know. I think about, like, space and how it's like, oh, it's just, like, you know, empty darkness. Like, what do I feel like reading about this book about these kids in a ship, whatever, you know, floating out in space? And I read it and it's great. And I'm like, oh, why don't I read more? Why don't I read more of this genre?
Yeah.
So I feel you.
Yep. I totally get it. So anywho, but I'm so glad that you suggested this pick.
Yay.
Because I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm so glad that we got to chat about it with everybody. I'm talking about you like, hey, I'm so glad we got to all chat together, as if you are all participating in this chat in real time. But I do feel very happy knowing that people are listening to this and hopefully we'll go and read this amazing book.
Yes, please do. For real.
In the meantime, I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I agree. I thought the book was great. There's a lot of creativity in it, a lot of beautiful turns of phrases. The characters are great. I think everyone should read it. And thanks to everyone who got it and read along with us. It's been fun. It's been real. Y'all were here with us in spirit, in this conversation with us in spirit. I felt it.
Yay.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. We loved it. So, and we love doing this every few months, just because, as you might know about us, we can talk a lot.
Oh my God.
So it's fun to talk about, like, one specific book and just, yeah, nerd out. So, yay.
Go in, yeah.
Thank you so much for tuning in this week. You can always leave us feedback on the show on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. It helps let us know how we're doing, but it also helps others find us. And you can always send us an email at heyya@bookriot.com. Don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, and of course, all things bookish always. Thank you to today's sponsors for making this show possible. And thank you so much to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. You can follow me on Instagram at Tears of Price. And Erica, how about you?
I'm at Twitter at @Erica_EZE_. I noticed you didn't say Twitter.
I've not deleted my account, but, like, I'm really not on there anymore. Or should we say X?
We shouldn't. We shouldn't. But yeah.
No, we shouldn't. We should. Yes. I agree with you.
Yeah.
So, yes. Anywho, but we will talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Until then, happy reading.
Happy reading.